Oh, good stuff. Our bumper music today is by the punk rock marching band Muka Paza.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff. They're going to be in residency at Mass Mocha in North Adams this weekend, playing some like 5 shows starting tomorrow night. And throughout the show, we'll be hearing our bumper music thanks to Muka Paza.
I'm there.
Which is A, because they sound great, and B, because I just enjoy saying Muka Paza.
Yeah. And I think the literal translation is much paza.
Yeah, much paza. Muka. Muka Paza. Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable discussion, our roundtable panel for this Thursday, the 14th of August. Though I think it may be the 15th. I believe it's the 15th.
I think you're probably
it
right.
It says here on the rundown that it's the 15th, or the 14th, but I believe it's the 15th.
I was once talking to a shrink who said that the way that they evaluated whether somebody knew where they were was they asked them the day.
Yes.
We lose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have many topics to talk about. Let us introduce our panel officially. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. Always happy to be here.
It is a delight, and you exude happiness, and I thank you
for
that.
I do.
Yes. And the editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, is with us as well. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Joe.
Also exuding joy
Trying
and happiness.
To exude.
Yes. We start, unfortunately, with a story that is horrific, and that is the news that is coming out of Egypt. Hundreds dead as a result of violence in Egypt, and this is a topic that we have talked about a lot on this program, and just as recently as 10 days ago, had a major one-hour discussion on this very topic. It is hoping that what happened would not happen, and unfortunately it did. And there were grave concerns for a number of days that there would be mass violence and mass casualties, and that is exactly what has occurred. I don't know, Alan, what do you think we're seeing right now in this great turmoil and ultimately, there's so many questions that we'll talk about this morning of how do we act internationally, how do we act as a nation, the United States, in response to this. But I guess first and foremost, on the world stage of how we should look at this event.
So obviously, what do I know? But here is the way it appears to me. The United States has to be for democracy. We say it is important to have elections and let the people's will be heard. People's will were heard. The Muslim Brotherhood gets elected. Then the accusations are, A, that Morsi, the president, does very little to turn around some very tough times in Egypt, and so that the masses get very angry at him. And the second thing is that he begins to move. This is the accusation. I don't know whether it's true or not, but the accusation is that they begin to set things up so that they will control the electoral process, the governmental process, and that the other guys won't have a chance. So that is what the rationalization is. But there's one more thing I just want to say, and that is that if you're a general and you make the move to kick out the Muslim Brotherhood, and you know that if the Muslim Brotherhood comes back, your behind is in real trouble. You go as far as you have to go to make sure that they don't come back.
And what does it mean for the broader region, too, or for the future? Is this a huge setback, or is this just one of the sidetracks we're going to take? And the effort to have a more liberal area there will continue.
Yeah, and the Arab Spring issue, the whole Arab Spring issue is in question here, because all along we have asked the question: if you better be careful about who you're supporting to take over. The dictators, they're bad. We know that. But on the other hand, are the people who are coming in would-be dictators? Are they people who will persecute minorities themselves? Are they people who will fix the system so that only they can win? That's got to call into question all of these revolutions.
Democracy isn't perfect. You're not always going to get perfect people running administrations. So you've got to understand that going in, too.
But how much democracy? In other words, that, to me, we have a relative democratic process in this country. Relative. In other words, there are plenty of things, money, other things that skew the whole thing. But in the end, a Republican can win, a Democrat can win. If somebody ignites as a third party, it doesn't seem, that happens very often, but it happens from time to time, can win as an independent. It can happen. Some of these countries, once the die is cast, it can't happen.
I want to read two paragraphs from the New York Times article this morning, and it's obviously very violent and very strong stuff, and I read it just because I think it's important to get a sense of what has happened. I mean, the attack, which is the third mass killing of the demonstrators since the military ousted Morsi 6 weeks ago. Followed a series of government threats. The scale lasting more than 12 hours with armored vehicles, bulldozers, tear gas, birdshot, live ammunition, and snipers, and the ferocity far exceeded the Interior Ministry's promises of a gradual and measured dispersal. At least one protester was incinerated in his tent. Many others were shot in the head or chest, including some who appeared to be in their early teens, including the 17-year-old daughter of a prominent Islamist leader. At a makeshift morgue in one field hospital on Wednesday morning, the number of bodies grew to 12 from 3 in a space of just 15 minutes. So these are clashes and gunfire that break out and then becomes a mass protest. And you just wonder at what point this stops and now let's ask the political question. So how does, because so far our government has said there will be no shift in policy, so what pressure is on the Obama administration at this point?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure. You know, I keep thinking about the Chinese in Tiananmen Square. You know, they sort of wrote the textbook on how this happens. What happens is if you're severe enough and if it goes the way that it does, you win. I mean, the Chinese won that. The government won. In a moral sense, no. But in a sense that they achieved the hegemony that they wanted, they did it. Now you see the Egyptians. But the wild card here is religion. See, religion gets to be so important that people will die for it. The real issue here for the United States is that they cannot deviate from the concept of democracy should rule. And that's what the Obama administration's doing. But they're also speaking with another voice, if you think about this, Judy and Joe. And that is that they could cut off all aid, but they don't.
They haven't. And where's the president? He has not specifically addressed this yet.
Right.
And the images you see on television this morning are of him golfing. And then you read the accounts of these hundreds, well over 500 people killed at this point, thousands of people injured. And
547 is the latest count.
Well, I can't believe he's not going to say anything. I think he has to say something.
You know, the editorial board of the New York Times writes this morning, President Obama must make clear his unequivocal opposition to the Egyptian military's conduct. He can do so by immediately suspending military aid and canceling joint military exercises scheduled for September. These steps can be reversed if the generals change their ways. But until then, the United States should slam the door on an aid program that has provided the Egyptian military with a $1.3 billion a year for decades.
Mostly military, mostly jet planes and things like that.
Right. So I think Judy makes a great point of, you know, at what point does the president come out, and is it already too late?
I don't think it's too late. I think the president can be measured. I think Judy's point is well put, except that I didn't like when she said that he was on the golf course playing golf. Now, look, this guy has been surrounded by every communication, everything he has. Everybody knows he's working hard, and everybody knows this is the toughest job in the world.
But she said the picture in the paper is of him out on the golf course. A distinction.
Not in the paper, on the television.
let's just understand the context that when somebody says that means that he's goofing off.
And that's how it's being presented.
I think that's her point, that's the way it's being presented on television. That's the way it's being presented. When you show in the news cameras, you say, here is the image of what is happening in Egypt. And now let's go to Martha's Vineyard and see where the president is. And there he is.
And my point has always been, when I argue with you or Judy.
Well, we're not arguing. No, we are
in a good way. Judy or okay. Or Rex a lot is the idea that. Contextually, when you do that, you are editorializing on the front page of the paper. In other words, you are saying, here's 500 people dying, and here is the president playing golf.
Well, that was exactly her point.
And as I said, it wasn't on the front page of the newspaper, but it was on television.
But was it intentional when they do that sequentially?
They want the most current image they have of the president. Apparently he was playing golf yesterday.
And no producer ever, you know, is able to make the distinction that we are offering this as a political commentary without it being responsible for it being a political commentary.
Meanwhile, the Secretary of State spoke out again on Wednesday. But the paper, newspaper, the New York Times, goes on in their editorial that it is now up to Mr. Obama to act. A cautious statement from a deputy press secretary in Martha's Vineyard that the Obama administration strongly condemns the violence and is reviewing the aid program is unlikely to get the general's attention. Canceling next month's joint exercises, which is now being considered, might. And if suspending a $1.3 billion subsidy does not do the trick, it will at least tell rank-and-file Egyptians that the United States is no longer underwriting repression.
But if we're sitting there in that room discussing it with the foreign policy advisors and everybody else, we're saying, wait a second now, you know, the Egyptians still play an important part in terms of the peace process. They play an important part in terms of the Israelis. We need them because they have always offered a certain amount of stability in the Middle East. So it isn't so simple, is my point.
Nothing's ever simple, but what's happening there? It's continuing today,
yes.
The same level it was at yesterday. When you read on with the New York Times, some of what was happening was really severe. People were trying to head into a hospital and were being shot as they were headed in.
Awful.
And from all sides, I guess, in the hospital, 3,700 are reported injured, and new protests are being urged and planned. So.
Well, I agree. But, you know, I mean, I just try to put myself in the place of the citizenry here in upstate New York, who are so bright and who really have the ability to assess this kind of thing and say, well, as Rex always says, golly gee whiz, Martha, look what's happening here. It ain't good for the Egyptians, that's for sure.
And what did the average Egyptians think?
Well, you see, that's interesting, because when they cast their ballots for different presidential candidates, the Muslim Brotherhood that stayed together won the election. And people said, well, you know, maybe this guy will be good for the whole country. And turns out he wasn't. At least, and you raised the question, what does the average Egyptian think? He wasn't. And so the sands shift. We had a fight on the Media Project this week about how important polls were. And I think polls are terribly important because they show you, it's a feedback for where the electorate is at a given moment.
We didn't have a fight. We had a discussion.
Yes. No, I know.
I like to see things in a fight.
You say hi and, you know, you say, it's a nice day. And he goes, and then you say, then you're fighting. So that's how that works.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Not to get back into this argument, I don't mean to do this. And yet it's exactly what I'm doing. But I want to, I just want to read from the I guess this is the Post coverage of the
Washington Post or the POST?
The Washington Post.
Okay.
Secretary of State Kerry said the violence in Cairo was deplorable and ran counter to Egyptian aspirations for peace, inclusion, and genuine democracy. He said the U.S. strongly opposed the military's imposition of a state of emergency, calling on all Egyptians to take a step back. But Mr. Kerry announced no punitive measures while President Obama vacationing here, Edgartown, Massachusetts, on Martha's Vineyard had no public reaction. Here's the line, get ready. As his chief diplomat was speaking of a pivotal moment for Egypt, the president was playing golf at a private club.
There you go. You see, there it is. It's an editorial.
Well, it is a fact.
Yes, but how you arrange facts can have tremendous import in terms of what people are believing, and you know it when you do it.
You know, I don't begrudge the president a vacation, but it does seem like a pivotal moment in the Mideast.
Well, his top guy said it. So, you know, you think the top guy and the president don't speak? They do.
The president's the top guy.
No, his foreign policy
yeah,
top
I know,
guy.
But,
yeah,
okay.
but should the president get out and say and all right, so let's forget the image.
Wait, I'm going to predict something as I did earlier. He will speak on this.
I'm
matter.
Sure he will, but yeah. but again, you know, there are
it's
a lot of people
unfolding.
Looking for him to speak yesterday. But the question is, so forget the image, forget how it looks, forget that he's on the golf course when all of this is going down, forget all of that. Yeah. The actual issue of the aid, is that, in your opinion, a good idea?
Well, even the aid, you know, mm-hmm. we can't play this as in an unsophisticated way. I'm not accusing either of you of doing that. But because, you know, I happen to think Eisenhower...
I think he is.
Which means he is. But that's
I think Eisenhower was
subtext.
Eisenhower was quite clear about the military-industrial complex. So if we give them $1.5 billion in aid... which I believe is the second most in that we do. Then who is being helped? Is it the Egyptians or the people who we are paying to manufacture this stuff to send to the Egyptians? And are we prisoners of that?
The Secretary of State said the only sustainable path for either side is one toward a political solution, adding, "I'm convinced that path is in fact still open, even if the bloodshed of the last 24 hours has made it far more difficult." So there is still hope, and I don't know. It doesn't seem to be an overly hopeful situation at the moment, but hopefully that changes.
As I say, the Chinese wrote the textbook.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit more about the subject, and then we'll go to NPR News and find out the latest of what is happening in Egypt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Ballston Lake Pottery, Ballston Lake, New York, offering handmade porcelain pottery, vases, table lamps, place settings, and more since 1975. Wedding registry available. BallstonLakePottery.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy. InterimHealthcare.com. First Sun Solar, Springfield, Massachusetts, specializing in the design and installation of solar PV electric systems, customizing and managing residential and commercial solar projects. FirstSunSolarCo.com. Bridgeside Grill, Sunderland Center, Massachusetts, offering lunch and dinner daily and brunch on weekends, featuring seasonal outdoor dining. Member of CISA since 2007, BridgesideGrill.com for menu. And Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts, working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence. Elms.edu.
Welcome back to our panel. You can join us by emailing us roundtable@wamc.org. We are talking to Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette. Alan Chartok in the studio as well. We're talking about the horrific scene in Egypt that has taken place over the last 18 hours or so. So real quick in our final 3 minutes before we go over to NPR News, with the state of emergency declared in Egypt, continued unrest in Bahrain, democracy under threat in Tunisia, Libya, and possibly even Turkey, and an all-out civil war in Syria, is there any hope left for the anti-authoritarian movement that swept through the Middle East? Another way of saying, is this the end of the Arab Spring?
It's a profound question. Because a lot depends on after the so-called revolutions, how people conduct themselves. Are they embrace democracy or not? And I think that's a country by country answer.
You know, I think major revolutions or major transformations in how a government operates or how a whole region operates, I think it happens over a long period of time. And I think mm-hmm. the Arab Spring was one moment of that time. But I think the direction they're headed in will continue to be towards democracy and towards a more liberal approach to how they live their lives?
Well, yes, and whether or not there's something else going on. So that, for example, we know that the Egyptians military have really had an infrastructure that goes very, very deep. A lot of people got very rich and all the rest as a result of that, and they didn't want to give it up. By the way, that's not only true there, it's true in Turkey, it's true in China, in which the party literally owns businesses and things of that kind, and that's true in Egypt. So there's a lot going on that we don't see.
We welcome you again to write to us. We'd love to hear from you on this topic about Egypt and whatever topic we talk about next. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can go get us through Facebook and Twitter as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. When we come back, we will talk about other issues. But first, we will get an update from NPR News. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Reminder that our bumper music today is by the punk rock marching band Mucha Paza.
Can't have enough of that Paza.
I love it.
I like it especially with anchovies.
Paza, Mucha Paza with a side of anchovies. They're in residency at Mass Mocha. They're going to be playing this weekend a bunch of shows starting tomorrow night. And you can go to massmocha.org to find out more information. We have a quick letter here from... George, who is a retired captain in the U.S. Navy, who said a very important discussion about Egypt. The dissonant aspect, as you mentioned, is that the Islamists and Morsi want to subjugate the secularists and veer from freedoms of all sorts to create an Islamist state that would persecute millions and probably lead to the imprisonment and murder of thousands. Perhaps the general realized this and decided his goose was cooked if he didn't intervene to end Morsi's authoritarian rule. Just a speculation. What do you think of it?
Well, I said much the same thing before.
George, thank you very much for your comments. We welcome yours as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org is our... email address, and we would love to hear from you, and we'll read your items throughout the show. Again, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's talk about some other topics. Change the way of things here, and talk about Jesse Jackson Jr. By the way, President Obama is to make a statement soon about the situation in Egypt, so I assume we may cover that. But I don't know. We'll see.
I'm sure Ian will put his face in
the
door
see.
And
I'm,
tell us.
This just flashed over on my screen, so we will we'll see what we expect from that. If not, we'll at least get it on tape. The president expected to make a statement soon about the situation in Egypt, and we'll have more on that when it becomes available. Meanwhile, former U.S. Representative Jesse Jackson Jr., once a rising Democratic star, had his political fortunes implode over the use of campaign finances to support lavish personal spending, sentenced to 30 months in prison on Wednesday. He said, "I misled the American people." He said this before the U.S. District Judge, who imposed the term, which also included an order of restitution and community service. The ex-Illinois lawmaker's wife received a 12-month sentence for her role in her husband's misuse of roughly $750,000 in campaign funds over several years. I this is one of those stories that we hear a lot of this, of misuse of campaign funds, misuse of funds in general, and what do we do about that, especially when you have someone who has such a bright political future?
Right. It's a classic example of a tragic fall.
Yes.
Fell from grace from his own mistakes, his own faults. But, you know, politicians spend a lot of time raising money. In many cases, they're trying to win an election, but a lot of times they don't need to spend this money on campaigns. They easily get reelected, and so they have essentially these slush funds. Mm. You know, you get it a little bit in New York, but you don't. It's the excess. At what point does it become excessive? And when you're buying Michael Jackson paraphernalia, or whether or not, I mean, in New York State, our politicians use their campaign funds to, you know, send flowers when someone important in the community dies. So where do you draw the line of, in this case, it's very excessive.
When you buy a Rolex, the watch.
When you buy, that's the line.
It. Yeah.
Right.
Christine Lavin, the great folk singer, wrote a song which I often refer to, which is, How Could He? You know, basically, how could he? You know, Prince Harry puts on a Nazi uniform and you say, what? You know,
what were you thinking?
What were you thinking? What could they have been? What could he have been thinking?
Such an important family, such an important name.
Yeah.
Meant a lot to many people. I don't know how much it's hurt the family itself, but in this, it's a very sad day for that.
Anthony Weiner sends out a picture of his junk, and you say, what could he have been thinking? And it goes on all the time. Politicians are being carted off to jail for doing it, and you go and do it again. What is that? Either arrogance, or it's not going to happen to me, or I've done it so often, like you say, Judy, it's gone over the line little by little by little, and now I think I can do anything I want. Yeah. And one other thing, and that is, be very careful when you're signing your tax return, Mrs. Jackson. Then they put it in front of you because that makes you co-responsible.
And who was also a city alderman in Chicago, correct?
Right. But you also have to wonder. I mean, I do not want to, you know, implicate. But obviously the charity has been implicated. But you know, if you have $750,000 that you're using that suddenly comes available, I think she must have known something.
Yeah. No. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Okay, I'm saying that, but I am also making a warning to all of you out there. Be careful about what you're signing.
Right. And does it tarnish the does the action of the son tarnish the legacy of the father?
Father has a very strong legacy, and he was there for him yesterday, and he counseled him, and he, at least the son was a stand-up guy at the end, admitted his mistakes, didn't say, like, well, I didn't know the rules. He admitted the mistakes. He took the blame. He did try to get the wife so she didn't have to do jail time, but she is doing jail time. And the judge, to her credit, said, you know, you guys have to serve jail time. This has to be an example that we're not going to allow this kind of corruption to continue.
And by the way, that's a mouthful, because you're exactly right. The IRS often comes out with major figure prosecutions, which is a way of getting other people to comply.
Jesse Jackson Sr. said, I don't know how I missed so many signs. And he certainly seemed like a father who was obviously there for a son, but also, you know, very upset by the,
you know, one
the situation
of the,
to see a kid go to jail.
Yeah. One of the greatest things that Jesse Jackson Jr. did, I'll never forget it, was when the father was lambasting Obama for, you know, during the primaries, I guess it was, and the son said, no, we're for Obama. I remember that. I remember it very well. And it was a sort of a gentle but nice separation between himself and his father.
You know, the sad thing is we'll probably be here 5 years from now discussing a similar case.
Without question.
Right. Another prominent.
It's so difficult for me to understand how people know this stuff. Another politician will be hitting on an intern after everything that has gone on. Now, what do we learn nothing?
And that idea that you're going to get away with it and you're not going to get caught,
and probably because you've done it before,
right? I want to just read two letters that we have on Egypt, and then we'll go to a quick break. We got this from Rich, who says, I would like to see you bring up a discussion of how protests in the United States have been met with government crackdowns, corporate and FBI surveillance, most recently of the Occupy movement, sure, at the bidding of the banking corporatocracy, which we saw all over and even here in Albany at the hand of Mr. Cuomo.
And by the way, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I thought that the stand-up guy in that case was our DA, who refused to prosecute them, even though the governor was apparently infuriated, and so was the so were other top officials. But the DA was a stand-up guy. I think he deserves all kinds of credit for having done that and for recognizing what was going on, because I think that by not prosecuting, he was substantially supporting what was said in that letter.
And Anonymous says, thank you, Dr. Shartok, for your insightful analysis of tragic events, which, as you stated, we here in this country simply cannot fully comprehend what really is occurring with this culture, which has a history expanding thousands of years. We always welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about an issue closer to home and other issues as well. Again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from McCabe & Mack, attorneys at law, Poughkeepsie, New York, representing clients throughout the Hudson Valley in matters involving creditors' rights, bankruptcy, and reorganization. MCCM.com. Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, New York, a specialty health food store with organic, vegan, gluten-free foods, supplements, herbal remedies, skincare. SunflowerNatural.com for new mobile app with hours, event information, and more. And Baypath College Graduate School, offering a Master of Science in Strategic Fundraising and Philanthropy on campus or online at graduate.baypath.edu.
Welcome back to our program. no, that's okay. That was me. That was me gesticulating. That's all right.
unless you were watching at WAMC.org.
That's right. No, poor Jess. I was. We were having a spirited conversation in the studio, as we often do, and I was. I had raised my hands, and she took that as the sign for us to come back.
Interesting.
You see. But I didn't want to interrupt Muka Paza.
Muka Paza.
That's right.
Muka Paza. You said before anchovies on the side. See, the joke was Muka Paza, Paza. Muka Pizza. And
right.
So I said, with anchovies, and you said on the side.
I was thinking you meant pasta, because
no.
you could have pasta. And then have the anchovies either on the side or in the sauce.
But if you change the A to an I, right,
it's
would
pizza.
Be pizza, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pasta, pizza, pizza, pasta.
Pizza.
Yes.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Been married too long. All right. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Judy Patrick is here, and so is Alan Chartok. Let's talk about the town of Rotterdam and some interesting, I think, you know, this is one of those stories. I read this morning. Judy sent this over, and I thought to myself, you know, my wife and I have been talking about this for a year, wondering about the legality of this, and it's a fascinating issue, and it has to do with pools and not in-ground pools, not stationary above-ground pools, but those temporary inflatable pools that they have that now have pumps and all of that stuff. And the question is, if you have an in-ground pool, you have to have a fence. If you have a stationary above-ground pool, you have to have a fence. But what about the temporary inflatable pools?
So in Schenectady County's town of Rotterdam, the code enforcement officer has been going around issuing tickets or code violations to people who do not have fences and security devices on these inflatable pools that cost about $250 at Kmart. And if you don't comply with the state code on this, you can face substantial penalties.
Can you swim in those pools?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
They're big enough to swim?
They're not kiddie pools.
You can't do laps?
You know, no, but you know the above-the-ground pools that are round and, you know, just...
Yeah, sure.
But you can bounce around them and have fun, and they're very similar to that. They're just not as permanent.
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, This has nothing to do with that pool, of course, but it does have to do with our fence out there. Central Avenue, it can be challenged at times over here. And,
yes.
And you know, law enforcement is needed, and we've had murders.
Right.
We've had other things that happen here. We have prostitution. We have some other things that go on every once in a while. It gets a little scary. And every once in a while, the code enforcer will come on and say, your fence needs to be painted. There's a little piece of rust on your fence. That's almost funny. I mean, you know, here they are enforcing that.
Well, in this case, the fence is obviously... Yes, but I think the point here, obviously, is one about safety and children getting into the pools. And if it is a large... And I mean this relatively in the pool sense, but if it's a large body of water, and
like
if it's an above ground versus a still an inflatable pool, the thing the article makes a point about, which I think is an excellent point though, is that these pools are $200. The fence will cost you like $800.
Right, and the pools you deflate in the fall and you put them back in the garage, and so you'll put them in, then the fence will still be there. People are spending the $800, and they're to put these fences up so they won't face even higher penalties.
If they have the $800.
If they have the
$800. So does that mean that the rich get to have pools and or the middle class get to have pools and poor people can't?
You know, the people in Rotterdam are claiming that it's the town just trying to get money. The code enforcement officer will say, if someone dies in one of these pools because they haven't had the appropriate safety protections, we're going to get criticized. They're just trying to protect the kids. But they're all over the area. How often do you see them with a fence?
I've never seen them with a fence, and you see them all over the place. I mean, it's hard. You're hard pressed to drive home in our commute of little under an hour and not see, you know, several dozen of them.
Yeah, but did anybody ever die in a pool which is, you know, properly accoutrementized?
Sure. They
absolutely
die all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, there are tragic stories, and I do think that...
But there are tragic stories everywhere across the street.
No, certainly. But I understand if you have a pool and you live in a neighborhood and you put a fence around it, I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. I have no issues about that.
Sure.
But that is also a permanent installation as opposed to a temporary one. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I think it's an interesting issue, though, because it's because these pools, basically you put in a pump and you can pop them up in 5 minutes and fill them up with water, and you're set to go.
You know, and they're those foot tall pools, the little wading pools that I imagine a toddler could swim or could drown in as well.
Yeah, that's next.
You know, and then absolutely. You know, the slip and slide. I mean, I don't know. You know, where does it end?
Causing quite an uproar in the town of Rotterdam.
Sure. And but interestingly, I mean, I haven't heard a larger debate on it. And it's interesting that this one town sort of has grasped this as an issue.
And we put it on the front page today.
Rotterdam ever in the
well, it's a good story. We're talking about it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let us go to, let's see here.
Okay, why don't we go to...
General people fighting Mr. Shartok. This is serious stuff, and giving so much time to obvious editorializing of saying clearly that our president is ... not taking this seriously as he swings and sways without Sammy Kay. When presumably a civil government carries on violently and openly for any kind of non-Egyptian involvement is concerned, the fruits of humanity derived from frank, open, honest, and comprehensive discussion rarely blossom, never mind something meaningfully, from a country with limited influence compared to that of the world at large. Currently, our best bet to me is the United Nations, which point I am sorry to say, I think that I have not heard any of you mention in all of the discussions of Egypt that I have heard from you.
That's great that he wrote, or she wrote.
We haven't heard any discussions about the UN getting involved at this point. It's true.
No, well, there was on our news just now. They did mention that the president of Turkey was calling for international involvement, and I believe the UN, but I can't exactly remember. He's doing something else.
Cool. Getting his coffee.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Getting my coffee. Yes, that's right, Judy.
All right. One of the other stories that we want to talk about. What is there? Oh, I thought there was something. I thought you were commenting.
No.
No, you were just snorting? Okay, gotcha. Another listener writes in and says, responsible owners place a pool cover over the top secured when they're not using it. Anyone who wants to get in will climb a fence or climb under the pool, but the pool itself can be covered to prevent accidents. That would be one way to curb these particular issues.
Still in violation of code, though.
Right. Code enforcement. Also, we want to this is an interesting story. I'll leave this for the last 4 minutes of the show for two reasons. One, because I don't really want to go too far on it. And two, well, this way we'll hopefully get in less trouble. There is a survey that is out that said there is more sex on campus today? Not really, a new study says. Young adults today aren't having more sex on campus than peers did 25 years ago, but they're having sex with less commitment from partners. According to this survey, sex on college campuses isn't any more prevalent than it was 25 years ago, despite what's often termed a hookup culture that suggests otherwise, according to research presented comparing current-day college students with those of 25 years ago.
Before I came in here, I was watching the History Channel and watching the history of Woodstock. And, you know, this is the kind of claim that gets made over and over again. I was interviewing a wonderful woman who died recently at 100 years old. I was interviewing her before she died, and I asked her about morality at one of the most famous women's colleges in New York City, and she said, "If you mean were we doing this, we were. If you mean were we talking about it, less so."
You know, this hookup culture discussion has been going on for the last year or so, and we have this, and we talk about this in the office, exactly what is it? And according to the survey, even the college kids don't know what a real hookup, well, they have different definitions of hookup.
Right. I think hookup means you meet somebody in a bar and going.
But you're getting a number can be a hookup, hanging out with them can be a hookup, or actual sexual intercourse can be a hookup.
I think the implication is sexual intercourse.
Yeah, I mean, in most cases.
Right, but in the poll, when they asked people, what do you mean by hookup, there was clear disagreement about what that meant.
Okay.
But clearly, sex is more casual now than it was 25 years ago.
Yes. I don't know about that. Not at Woodstock.
According to the poll.
Okay, but that's 40 years ago.
Oh, I see. And so it was 40 years ago versus 25 years ago.
I mean, I went to college 25 years ago.
It was wild and crazy, then we got a little repressed, and then we were wild and crazy.
Right. So, and I, you know...
Yeah.
All I know is after reading this article, I had a very, very boring college career.
Yeah. You were saying, where was I?
But according to the poll, and I know Alan likes polls, and that people are more likely to have sex with their friends and not consider it the start of they're heading down the path towards marriage. I know that always hasn't been the case, but they're more likely to have sex with friends, just casual sex.
44% versus 35% in the past with a casual date or a pickup. Or a friend, 69% versus 56%. Makes those friendships so complicated, doesn't it? My thanks to for all of you for joining us and for writing in. We appreciate it. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'd still like to hear what you have to say on these issues. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Alan, thank you.
Oh, Joe, always a pleasure.
We listen. We would love for you again to write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.